This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane! Wow! Touchdown! What an athlete!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec. Brought to you each Thursday at 7 p.m. by Power Rents. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080.
Hoo-wee.
The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Maliki Matavau, the Adidas All-American Bowl selection, the nation's number four tight end, is making his decision on May 27th. That's less than a week from now. The Oregon Ducks are widely considered the favorites to land him. He will join the show later tonight to preview his decision, talk about his top six, his recent visit to Oregon, or his last visit to Oregon. It was in March. We will obviously get to Luke Hill, the former Oregon Ducks signee who is being charged with first-degree attempted murder. But first, Will Darkins, we should start a GoFundMe. And if our listeners raise $24 million, they can pick our next job. So saith Spencer Dinwiddie, the NBA basketball player. I know it's not recruiting, but it is insane to me that this hasn't gotten more coverage. Spencer Dinwiddie created a GoFundMe page and said if fans, you at home, raised $24 million, then he would hold a poll and whoever won, that is who he would sign with. Never mind that the team might not want to sign him. Never mind that the average fan doesn't want to raise $24 million and put it in Spencer Dinwiddie's back pocket so he can then sign a multi-year, multi-million dollar contract in the NBA. It raised $1,000. And they shut it down. Does Spencer Dinwiddie not know we're in the middle of a pandemic that is causing millions upon millions of Americans to lose their jobs temporarily?
He doesn't know. He doesn't know, man. He's 18. He's just living in the moment. I mean, that's I think about my own recruiting process, and, you know, I don't think GoFundMe existed back in 07, but, like, I remember thinking that, like, you know, I had complete control of the situation and everything. But at the end of the day, I think a lot of these recruits just think they have so much control.
Well, he's an NBA player. Can you imagine if a recruit did this? That's where I'm going with this. Imagine if a recruit did this? Now, once they're able to profit off their own names, could you do that? Could you start a GoFundMe if you're a five-star quarterback and say, if you guys raise $1 million, we'll do the Alabama fan base, the Clemson fan base, the Washington fan base, the Oregon fan base. Whoever raises $1 million first, I'm going to take that money. The rest I will give back. Like, if Alabama gets to 800,000, you get your money back. And then I will commit to your school and I'll pocket the million.
You know who could have done it? Jimmy Clausen.
They had a parade when he committed.
Yeah.
There was an article in ESPN and people, grown men who are supposed to know, who reportedly know football, talked about how many national championships Notre Dame would win with him being the quarterback. Can you imagine not only putting that kind of pressure on a kid, but can you imagine those kind of expectations from an adult? How do you not know better? Even if you think he's a phenomenal quarterback, you still have to have an offensive line. You still have to have a defense. If he comes in and is immediately, as a freshman, the nation's best quarterback, how many Heisman Trophy winners who were the quarterback and were great didn't win a Heisman even though they were individually amazing? It just made no sense. And sometimes the hype in recruiting in particular goes bonkers. And the reason for that is it's an industry built on that, right? You want access. First of all, for most team sites, it's a subscription-based deal. So they want to give you good news because they want you to be excited because they want you to pay for a subscription. So they're not going to tell you negative stuff. They're going to tell you the best stuff. And they're going to hype up every 3- and 4-star recruit because they want you to get excited because they want you to subscribe. Then, because it's not typically trained professional journalists, a lot of times they get their sourcing by being very, 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 very positive. And I'm talking about the team sites, not the national guys we talk to like Brandon Huffman, Greg Biggins. Then their access and their info comes often from coaching staffs. And if you say this kid's good, but he's got a troubled past, they just stop talking to you. So if you're honest, that hurts. So you've got sales job right up front from all the team pages telling you how great every recruit is. Then you've got the ranking system. They don't want to dog a kid out or say a kid's terrible because they don't want the kid to stop talking to him so that when he does commit, they can't get an interview. And then, of course, when the coaches get him, when they have signing day, they're not going to say, you know, he's probably going to end up being a rotational linebacker for us junior, senior year, but we need depth. They're going to tell you how amazing he is. So everything about the system is built on overhype. And that's why fans think the system and recruiting in general is really overhyped. So you need a nuanced approach. You need somebody to tell you the truth. Sometimes I hope that's us, but I do understand why that happens in recruiting.
Well, and wasn't that the case too with Kayvon Thibodeau, was that, you know, he was the number one recruit overall in the country, and that he came in and fans just kind of had this overwhelming expectation that he would just be a complete wrecker. Like he would just destroy offenses right off the bat. And it's like, well, it really doesn't work that way with defensive players, especially at defensive end, where it's like you got to grow a little bit. Yeah, I mean, the kid's an athletic freak, but I mean, you even reported it, you know, I think early on where you were saying like the kid didn't even lift.
Done. He wasn't super dedicated to the weight room before he got to Oregon, and he squatted. I don't know exactly what the amount was, but I remember at the time it was something like what I was lifting or what I was maxing at the gym, and I'm 5'8".
Yeah, because so, he doesn't know. Because he doesn't know what he's doing.
And I'm a grown adult who lifts a little bit or used to lift a little bit, and he'd never lifted. He's a high school kid. So he didn't have that experience. He didn't have that strength. And even he, by the way, was just absolutely beyond any shadow of a doubt. You'd say he panned out and it far exceeded expectations. And he had 9 sacks.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh my gosh, he's a world beater. He's going to be the number one pick. 9 sacks is incredible for a freshman. Incredible. But in the spectrum of, I think what sometimes fans think when a freshman shows up on campus, they'd be like, he wasn't even a double digit sack guy. It's like, he's the most productive number one overall recruit for a defensive end in like 25 years or something. I mean, he's a monster.
A defensive end. And I feel like that position more than any other one, I mean, there are exceptions. I mean, Chase Young is the exception, but like a lot of the times they can kind of fill out into the background and you don't notice them enough until scouts really start to point them out. I remember as a kid, Mario Williams was that way at NC State. Mario Williams was somebody who very late in the combine and the draft process, people started to really put him up the big board and say, I think he could go before Reggie Bush. And you were like, who the hell is this guy? And you start watching tape and you go, okay, I can see it.
Oh, he's really good.
Yeah, I can see it now. And I think that's with Kayvon Thibodeau as well, is that like, you got to go back and watch the tape a little bit closer and say, okay, I can see where the raw potential is.
We got to get to Luke Hill. He signed with the Oregon Ducks in December. Mario Cristobal released a statement yesterday after Luke Hill was charged with 8 counts and arrested in Maryland. He was charged with felony first degree assault and attempted murder in the first degree. Mario Cristobal's quote, he was informed earlier this spring that he would not be a member of the program. That is not cover, folks. I had heard that months ago. That happened.
That's what I thought, though. I thought that was a cover move on them.
No, it truly, truly wasn't. And I've talked to multiple recruiting guys who are connected to Oregon, and the reality is Oregon had made this move months ago. It's true. The problem here and why this situation becomes nuanced, and we'll get to the details of the crime, but I first want to get into Oregon's side of it. Why it's nuanced is this is a young man who's a high school kid. So if you start to have concerns, you sign him in December. Now remember, these kids don't show up to campus sometimes until August the following year. There's a lot that can go on in a 17 or 18 year old's life in 7-8 months. They can really fall off the rails and screw up.
Yeah.
Luke Hill had an incident. It was not criminal, seriously criminal, at the Polynesian Bowl. I have multiple sources on that. A lot of people have heard about that too. And the reason that kind of stuff doesn't come out is there's little knucklehead stuff kids do when they're at these All-American games or they're at these events that just, they're a high school kid. It's not the end of the world. You don't slam them. You just kind of move on. So there were red flags from Luke Hill from the very beginning. But from Oregon's standpoint, if you're going to sign a kid and then you later realize he's got character issues, if you just announce, once he's signed, you're allowed to talk about him. It's not an NCAA violation. If you just announce at a spring practice, we're not taking Luke Hill anymore, we're cutting him, it looks terrible for the kid. It raises red flags at any other landing spot he could potentially go to. It is better if the kid just announces he's decommitting or moves on. If the kid doesn't announce that, and I found this in the last day, I've tried to contact FCS coaches, Pac-12 coaches, and they said it actually does create a real gray area. if there's a kid who's an academic, who's an academic issue kind of guy, if it's a behavioral thing after they signed, if the kid doesn't announce a decommitment, sometimes you just let it go. Because it's better left unspoken than every reporter in that area. If a kid commits to Alabama and suddenly just dips, you know Alabama reporters are going to try to figure out what's going on. And if it's academics, if it's a family issue, if it's a minor criminal issue, they should all be taken seriously. This is not minor, but if it's a minor criminal issue, it all gets kicked up and you just hope, hopefully the kid matures, finds a different spot, finds a better way to insulate himself where people can really help him and it won't be a huge issue. Oregon had moved on prior to him being that, when it was a red flag character issue.
Well, and if you kind of go back to what you were saying a couple of minutes ago about the whole idea that, you know, there's so many of these fans that are adults of players that are college football players that essentially are kids for the most part. I mean, their first 2 years, they're kids. Maybe by the time they're seniors, you can think of them more as young adults, but I think it's the same way with this news, because I remember thinking, you know, when I first heard about it, which was, you know, what is this kid thinking? What is he doing? He's throwing away his future. This is absolutely ridiculous. You know, this is the kind of behavior that you don't expect out of any type of recruit. And then you kind of have that bring it down moment where you say, well, he's 18.
Yeah.
17.
So,
you know, kids, make, even though this is an awful mistake and this is some type of reality that I can't even imagine, it's a mistake nonetheless by an 18-year-old.
Let's get into it. Luke Hill, Under Armour All-American game selection. 8 charges, again, including felony first-degree assault and attempted murder in the first degree. The details, according to the District Court of Maryland, charging document obtained by ESPN, Rhode Island basketball signee Ishmael Leggett told police that Hill called Leggett's girlfriend and was threatening her about her current relationship. Hill had previously dated the woman, according to Leggett. Initially, his name was redacted from this document. However, Rhode Island's coaches talked about it. It's known that it's Ishmael Leggett. Leggett told police he was playing basketball when he observed the suspect, Luke Hill, in a white older vehicle with tint start shooting at him. Leggett's mother told police she was pulling in her driveway when she heard the gunshots. Police said they recovered 7 40 caliber shell casings from the street and that the victim's house was struck twice. That's not a minor accident. And I want to be clear here. He has not to date had anything even close to resembling this, but he did come with character red flags when Oregon signed him in December. And there were real concerns about whether he could get it figured out. The hope at the time, because he was just a 17-year-old kid who hadn't made a huge mistake, was that if you get him out of his home, if you get him away, you move him to a West Coast and you insulate him with a structured program, that he would grow and mature. Because again, he wasn't the kid who shot at another guy. He was just a kid who had some red flags. But after he signed, as it continued into his senior year in January and February, there were more red flags. And again, there was an incident at the Poly Bowl, and that has not been widely reported, but multiple sources confirm, if you really want to know, you can find out. There was an incident at the Poly Bowl at the hotel. And that even is just a kid being a knucklehead. So Oregon moves on from him. I'd heard that. I know a lot of people had heard that. A lot of the recruiting reporters had heard it, but you don't want to write Luke Hill is a knucklehead because he's a 17 or 18 year old kid. So you let bygones be bygones. You hope he finds another spot. Where Oregon gets connected to this is they signed him in December. Oregon didn't want to release a statement. They did the kid a favor by saying, we're not going to announce that we released you because you're a knucklehead. Now, this is speculation on my part. I don't have this from Oregon. I know there were red flags. I'm saying this is what I assume happened. Oregon did confirm they cut ties, but you don't want to announce that with the kid because you don't want to throw him under the bus. And that's what I've heard from coaches I've talked to in the last 24 hours. What do you do in this situation? You sign a kid, he has an off-the-field incident, you find out more about his character, or he takes a detour in the 8 months before he shows up to campus and falls apart. And they say the same thing. You kind of, in those situations, every coach said the same thing. It's a gray area, but you kind of back off, hope the kid finds a different landing spot. They insulate him better. He's excited about his future and he makes better choices. Oregon had moved on before this happened. They're linked to it. It is unfortunate. I hope Luke Hill figures it out because he's still just an 18-year-old kid, but he had kind of already blown at least chance number one. Given that Oregon had released him essentially from his scholarship months ago, this is kind of mistake number two, and it's a big one. I hope he figures it out.
I mean, that's all you can hope for at this point. And I think, again, it's just that perspective that fans, I think, forget sometimes is that these are kids.
Right.
These really are kids. Even though at the age of 18, you could do a lot of things that, you know, somehow kind of identify you as an adult, whether it be smoking or voting or whatever, join the military. At the end of the day, that's the kind of decision that you expect out of somebody who isn't a completely bought in adult, or at least what you would hope.
Well, and kids make mistakes, right?
I mean,
this is a big one. This is a huge one. This is certainly a bigger mistake than you or I have ever made, but he's 18, and there's a possibility that he's able to figure it out and get his life back on track. We certainly hope the best for him going forward and for Leggett and his girlfriend, because they're the victims of this situation. Oregon, as well as they've done on the recruiting trail, and they've done remarkably well, back-to-back number one recruiting classes in the Pac-12 the last 2 years. It's the first two times they've ever done it, and it comes back-to-back years. There's still room for improvement. I'll tell you why, where that comes from, and how they're going to address it in the 2021 recruiting class next. I'm recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 10A The Fan. If you followed recruiting at all or listened to the show in the last few years, you know Oregon's, frankly, just absolutely crushed it on the recruiting trail. Back-to-back number one recruiting classes in the Pac-12. Prior to the last 2 years, they'd never done it before. They're looking to do it again for a third year. But even in those numbers, Oregon has left a little to be desired. And I'm not talking about, well, they could finish number one and they finish number eight. That's not what I'm talking about, because that's unrealistic. That's too steep a curve for anybody, really, to finish number one or else. Unless you're Alabama, I don't think that's really, or Clemson, I don't know that that's a real realistic way to look at recruiting. But when you look at the way that Oregon's recruited in the past few years, they've done really well at offensive line, and they've done really well on the defensive side of the ball. They get five-star defensive end Kayvon Thibodeau. They get five-star linebacker Justin Flo. They get five-star linebacker Noah Sewell. They get five-star corner Dante Manning. They've done a great job. Even if you go back a few years ago, even when Willie Taggart was recruiting, high four-star corner Thomas Graham Jr., the number one athlete in the nation, D'Amador Lenore. I listed a bunch of names there. They're most high-profile kids in the last 3-4 years. And if you pay attention, you'll notice they all come from the defensive side of the ball. As well as Oregon has recruited, their blue-chip guys have come almost exclusively on the defensive side of the ball. And the defense deserves a tremendous amount of credit, and that's why their defense is projected to potentially be the number one defense in America. Recruiting matters. They've recruited high-end talent at all three levels of the defense, defensive line, linebacker, and defensive backfield. And look at the way it's shaken out. Recruiting rankings matter. Oregon's recruited really well on defense. Suddenly, this Oregon program that was known as the offensive blur and the defense hung on and you hope you outscored people is going to be known for its defense. But Oregon has left a lot to be desired at the skill positions on offense. They've done a great job with offensive linemen, and you can go over Oregon's offensive line gets in the past few years, and it is impressive, obviously led by Penei Sewell, the Outland Trophy winner. No complaints there. But they haven't landed a blue-chip running back in the last few years. They've only landed 4 top 100 prospects who were receivers in the history of their recruiting rankings. And I have to put a little asterisk next to one of my favorite sayings, which is in the history of the program. Somebody pointed out, you can't really do that, because in the 70s, 80s, 90s, guys were recruited who were big-time guys, but there were no recruiting rankings. So we have to say, anytime we're talking about recruiting rankings and we say in the history of the program, what we really mean is in the history of recruiting rankings. And as much as it's become mainstream, recruiting rankings have only really been around since the year 2000. Derek Anderson and Kellen Clemens was the first recruiting class that really had a top 100. That's not that long ago. That's not that long ago. Oregon, in that time, has only recruited 4 elite blue chip top 100 prospects at the wide receiver position. And if you look at the last few years, it's been a little bit of a dumpster fire. They missed on a number of top targets in 2017. In 2018, they had 6, I think it was 6, because one guy was a hybrid wide receiver tight end, so that might technically be 5. But they had 5 or 6 four-star wide receivers decommit from the program and ended up getting guys that were on their board, I'd imagine, given who decommitted, at like 13, 14, 15 on their board. In 2019, misses. Didn't get the top guys they wanted. In the last recruiting cycle, everybody just kind of skims over the fact that they missed on a key wide receiver during the early signing period on signing day because they got 5-star linebacker Justin Flo, which was a monster get. But they had 6'6", 225-pound wide receiver Johnny Wilson, and he flipped to Arizona State on signing day in December. And again, we just kind of go over it because you go, well, they got Justin Flo. Noah Sewell's phenomenal. Great gets. But it speaks to a growing trend for the University of Oregon where they've gotten elite offensive line, great defensive recruits, and then not really delivered at tight end, wide receiver, and running back. In the last recruiting class, they got Seth Figgins. Seth Figgins, by his own admission, has some academic things to work out. He hasn't played football consistently in about 3.5 years because of a variety of injuries. He transferred to Sheldon and barely played at Sheldon. There's some speculation about, you know, what is going on in his future as far as does he like football? Does he really want to play football? So they didn't get a tight end in the last recruiting cycle. And all this leads me to this point. I think that's all going to change in the class of 2021. As great as Oregon's done on the defensive side of the ball, and I think they will continue to do a great job on the defensive side of the ball, there's been room for improvement, and it's at the offensive skill positions, and I think it's a problem they're about to solve in this 2021 recruiting class. They've already got Seven McGee. Now, if you've paid attention to recruiting over the last few years, Seven McGee at one point was rated the number 2 running back in the entire country. He went to the Oregon Duck Saturday Night Live camp. It's ill-named because the camp is actually takes place around like 3 o'clock, but they call it Saturday Night Live. Minor gripe. Some of the top kids in the country, they pay their own way to go there. A number of elite kids have been there over the years. Seven McGee's year, he came between his freshman and sophomore year and was one of the standouts. He had not started his sophomore year in high school, and he went to the camp and was one of the best players at the camp. That's how good Seven McGee is. Now, he's had some ineligibility issues. He talked about wanting to enroll early, so he was going to take online classes. I've heard all sorts of different things about whether he got his normal coursework done. I think he's got some work to make up, but he didn't play his junior year because he's moved back and forth between California and New York, so he didn't have a junior season. So he's dropped down in the rankings to around the number 11 running back in the country. Don't get it mixed up. Don't get it twisted. This is a kid that when he's on the field, when he's playing, is one of the most electric players in the entire country. He's been committed to Oregon for over a year. As long as he takes care of everything off the field, he will be at Oregon. Boom, you've got your blue chip running back. Wide receiver position. Oregon has struggled at the wide receiver position as we laid out, and it really seemed to almost start with the curse of the class of 2018. They had 5 or 6 four-star wide receivers or hybrid wide receiver tight ends committed during that class, and they didn't end up with any of those guys. They all went elsewhere. Miles Battle initially went to Texas A&M. Braden Lindsey went to Notre Dame. They were going to get potentially Chase Cota, who never committed. He ended up at UCLA. They were in the mix for all these guys. Michael Ezeke ended up at UCLA. Devin Culp ended up, he was tight end. He ended up at Washington. In the mix for all these guys and don't get them, and ever since then, they seem to have this problem. Problem's going to be solved this year, folks. I think Oregon's going to get 2 of the top 7 wide receivers in the entire country, and I think a couple of them could potentially happen relatively soon. Troy Franklin out of California is right on the cusp of 5-star status, the number 24 player in the entire country, the number 3 or 4 wide receiver in the country, and we've talked about this before, too. As the class gets closer to signing day, the 5-star certification, the guys that they officially kind of label 5-star talents, starts to go, the number goes up. He's at 24. Right now, there's about 21 5-stars depending on the site. Usually that drops down to about 30. So as long as he holds his spot at 24, he's going to be a 5-star wide receiver. And I'm telling you, I think Oregon's the leader. I have heard from multiple places that Oregon is in good shape for Troy Franklin. I think Oregon very easily could pull that off and bring him in. They're also in great shape for Dante Thornton, the number 7 wide receiver in the country. And number 7 wide receiver is not quite like number 7 running back, number 7 quarterback, even really number 7 corner. This is a passing-dominated sport now. You see it on Sundays, you see it on Saturdays, you're even starting to see it on Friday nights. A running back doesn't necessarily win you a title, but an elite quarterback and a great connection to a wide receiver or two really can. The number 7 wide receiver in the country is still like a top 40 prospect nationally. It's a high-value, high-production position. So if you're the number 7 wide receiver in the country, you're a potential 5-star prospect. Dante Thornton, I think, has a good chance to end up being a Duck. So now you've got, potentially, 2 of the top 7 wide receivers in the country, a kid who, when playing, when he wasn't ineligible for moving from California to New York, was considered the number 2 running back in the country. we already know about Ty Thompson, who's one of the top 100 prospects in the country. He jumped up 150 spots in Rivals updated rankings just last week. People are talking about him being a top 5 to 7 quarterback in the country. And then the tight end position. They struck out in the class of 2020 at the tight end position because Seth Figgins moved on. And he's got some, obviously, as he said on the record, he's got some academic and off the field stuff to work out. So they need a tight end. I think they're going to get their tight end later this month. Adidas All-American Bowl tight end Maliki Matavau, the number 4 tight end in the country, is making his decision on May 27th. Oregon is in his top 6. He's going to join the show next to preview his decision, talk about his 6 finalists, talk about his recent visit to Oregon, and then I will make a prediction on his landing spot. If you're an Oregon Duck fan, spoiler alert, you're going to be excited. That's next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. Joining me now on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick, it's Adidas All-American tight end, the nation's number 4 tight end, Maliki Matavau. Maliki, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. You've got a big decision coming up. I've found in recruiting, sometimes guys know where they're going to go, and they're waiting to announce because they want to do it on a special day. And sometimes guys set a commitment date and still aren't sure where they're going to go. Which category are you in? Are you still making a decision, or do you kind of know where you want to go and you're waiting for a special day to announce?
Yeah, I'm still making that decision. I kind of set the date, so I'm ready. So that's kind of what I'm doing.
How tough is that when you've got all this time? I mean, you've got time to think about it because everything's shut down, but how difficult is it when you've set yourself a date and you're still trying to consider all these factors, you're still probably hearing from coaches? Is that a difficult process even when you kind of know the deadline's coming?
It for sure is because, you know, I'm depending, you know, basing a lot of information on, you know, one visit, you know, so I've had to visit another school, so, you know, it's been tough just trying to figure out what I want and what each school has to offer. So it's been a really tough decision.
Now you have a top 6 of Georgia, Tennessee, UCLA, Washington, Penn State, and Oregon. And I know the NCAA's emergency dead period in response to the coronavirus shut down some of your plans. How much were you able to accomplish in terms of visits of those top 6 before things got shut down, and how many of your visits got canceled?
So I visited every school except Penn State, and now Penn State was a planned visit. Oregon was my last visit before the shutdown, the first weekend of March. But all the schools, I've planned to visit all those schools again because I visited them last summer, and I was going to plan to visit them again and take an official visit to 5 of those. But, you know, since, you know, the plans of the coronavirus, you know, kind of shut my plans down. So that's what kind of really happened.
Let's jump into your Oregon visit. It was your last visit right before things kind of shut down. What did you think of the trip to Eugene, and what stood out to you about the program and the facilities there?
First thing, you know, what stood out to me was, you know, driving through the town. I really like Eugene itself, so a really good feel. But got to, you know, first time ever stepping in the Oregon facilities was, you know, really amazing. You know, it's all, you know, every school has that glitz and glamour, but it was special for sure. I noticed everything, every little detail. I got to know the coaches really well. You know, I built a really good relationship with all of them now, especially during this time. But I really loved it there.
Who's your primary recruiter? Who do you talk to the most from Oregon?
Definitely Coach Cristobal and Coach Williams.
Who have you kind of personally connected to the most, and what is that relationship like? Like you said, you've got a lot of time to kind of build that relationship right now.
Yeah, you know, it's weird because I feel like I'm really close with Coach Cristobal. You know, we built a really good relationship, you know, on and off the field, talking about, you know, family stuff and, you know, where he's from and how he's, you know, got to where he is. And, you know, he's a really, you know, a hardworking head coach, and that's, you know, what I really like to see.
We're talking to Maliki Matavau. He is making his decision on May 27th. Oregon is in his top 6, along with Penn State, Georgia, Washington, Tennessee, and UCLA. You were selected as an Adidas All-American, which used to be the U.S. Army All-American Bowl. It's probably the premier high school all-star game in the country. It's been on national TV for years and years. What did it mean to you to be selected for that that event?
Man, I've always watched that game, you know, growing up, you know, even my freshman year in high school when, you know, I was still on that grind, looking at stuff, and, you know, I want to play in that game one day. And, you know, I remember where I was when I got that call from, you know, Eric Richards and, you know, Blair, telling me, you know, I've been selected in that game, and I was like right on the spot, you know, if I was going to play there and like, you know, commit to that game right away. But it's a huge, you know, huge honor, you know, that my hard work is paying off, you know, getting recognized. It's huge.
So I want to go over your top six. I want to give everybody an equal chance for you to talk about what you like about each school. So I'm going to go over each of them in no particular order. I'll ask you it the same way. What do you like about UCLA?
I'm huge for that life after football part because, you know, football is going to end soon for me. Who knows when? Hopefully never anytime soon, but it will, and I have the rest of my life to live, you know. You know, UCLA degree, you know, that piece of paper from UCLA is huge. You know, the amount of opportunities that I can get from UCLA is huge, and you know, that's a big factor in why UCLA is in my top six.
What do you like about Tennessee?
Tennessee, you know, I love the feel of Knoxville. You know, I love that country feel. Also, you know, playing in the SEC is huge. Playing, you know, some good ball, playing against good competition, and, you know, they're on the rise. Their recruitment, you know, have been amazing right now. I think they're ranked 2 right now, so that's why they're a huge on my list.
What do you like about Georgia?
Georgia as well, playing in the SEC, but I built a good relationship with Coach Hartley, their tight end coach. Bringing in a new OC, Coach Monken, Tampa Bay Buccaneer, and a former Brown coach, use the tight end as well, so that's another big reason why they're on my list.
Penn State?
I built a great relationship with that coaching staff, and, you know, pretty much all of them, but, you know, the history of tight end usage there, but also they have a really good business program, which is what I plan on majoring in, and the Smill College of Business is a great place. They've also built the Alumni Center there at Penn State. It's huge.
What do you like about Washington?
They've been after me pretty much my entire recruitment process, you know, shows, you know, how much love they have, but also just they've been pretty consistent on producing tight ends, and that's, you know, what really caught my eye.
What do you like about Oregon?
The home field, you know, it's close to home. In a sense, it is close to home, but also just really love the coaching staff there. You know, Spencer Webb, you know, their tight end, who's just that freshman that just produced really well. Also watching Jacob Breland perform, you know, now he's in the league. So, you know, all they have all the components I'm really looking for.
We're talking to Maliki Matavao. He's the number 4 tight end in the entire country, an Adidas All-American Bowl selection. He's making his decision May 27th. The tight end position has really changed and evolved over time. It used to be you guys were big, burly, and didn't catch a lot of passes. Then, you know, it kind of evolved where it became pass catchers. Now they do everything, and you see guys like George Kittle and Zach Ertz, Austin Hooper, Evan Ingram is more of that kind of wide receiver tight end hybrid, but there's lots of different kinds, but the key is you've got to be able to do a little bit of everything. What do you bring to the table as a tight end, and who do you kind of pattern yourself after? Who do you pattern your game after?
If I have to say something, I'm a real good mix, you know. A good George Kittle, Travis Kelce kind of Gronk kind of mix, you know. I'm a big body pass catcher. You know, you put a DB on me, he's too little, and, you know, I use my basketball abilities, you know, just box him out, out-jump him, put a linebacker on me, I'm going to be too fast, too athletic. So I have that, you know, that good aspect of a tight end, you know. I see myself as a complete tight end when I'm done, you know, finish growing. You know, I'm 6'6 and a half, almost 240 now, you know, running, you know, like a gazelle. You know, some guys saw, you know, I'm fast, deceivingly fast. But, you know, everything's one in the trenches, and that's, you know, where I pride my game in a lot, too, is that blocking. Because, you know, can't go anywhere without blocking. That's where it's, you know, get you to the next level after college. But that's what's a big part of my game is stretching the field vertically and, you know, blocking.
They say that with wide receivers, no block, no rock. I imagine that's doubly so for the tight end position, kind of where you're inside in tight there, where you can help chip and then get open.
Yep, for sure.
We always let people get out on this one. Is there anybody you want to say hey to, any shout-outs or anything you want to say, anybody to thank here before we let you go?
Sure, I just want to thank, you know, my family first and foremost. You know, I also want to thank God, but you know, I want to thank my entire coach staff at Liberty High School, and just thanks for letting me be here.
Yeah, no doubt, and thank you very much for doing this. No matter where you choose, obviously we're the home of the Ducks, but no matter where you choose, any of your 6 finalists is going to get a great football player, and we wish you the very best. We hope you find home wherever that may be.
All right, thank you, sir.
All righty, Will. We used to have this segment. We had it with Marcus Greaves. We had it with Mike Lynch. You're my 3rd producer that's been consistent. I don't know that we've ever had a miss from the producer making his prediction on where a kid will go. So you heard the interview. Where do you think he's going? And then I'll make my prediction.
Oregon.
Okay.
Yeah.
What makes you say that?
I don't know.
What stood out?
I don't know. What really stood out was even something beyond the interview, but just trolling this guy's social media. He makes a lot of mentions of Oregon. There's a lot of graphics of him in Oregon jerseys. And
he likes a lot of Oregon stuff, doesn't he?
He does like that kind of stuff. I mean, he talked about all the kind of stuff with his visit and everything. But, like, I swear to you, man, like, you go on social media now, and so much of this Generation Z puts everything of their expression into that media channel.
It's true.
You know what I mean? Like, I know we used to do it. Like, you know, back in 07 when I was in high school and it was still, Facebook was still kind of a new thing and you were still kind of, you know, curating your MySpace. There was a little bit of your personality, but like almost everything now is on social media.
I saw a tweet from somebody that they had tweeted, and we'll have to talk about this next segment, but I saw a tweet that was somebody saying, our generation, yours and mine, we scrapped our social media of any like holding a keg. It was like Red Solo cup, no keg cups, no beer, no anything. And this generation, if you make a twerk video and it goes viral, you're just a social media relations person for a company and potentially like their social media PR person. It's completely changed. And not only that, people are putting, like you said, more of their lives on there. Look for likes, look for retweets for sure. But one of the things that stood out to me in that interview with Maliki is he talked about all the different things other programs have. And then when he talked about Oregon, he said they have everything. They have a little bit of everything.
It's because they pretty much do. The only places that probably have more are maybe Alabama and Texas A&M.
They're close to home. Oregon needs a tight end. Spencer Webb is a little bit more of that receiver like Evan Engram, where you can bring him out and split him out wide. So there are different kinds of tight ends. And Maliki Matavau at 6'6.5", 240 pounds, is going to be, and he's a great receiver, but he's that bigger, burlier guy that could find a spot in the middle of a defense, sit in a hole, catch a ball, turn, and get some yak. But Spencer Webb can line up outside. So you could potentially play them and have two different skill sets playing a two tight end set. I think the marriage is actually really good with the two of them. I think he's going to Oregon. I feel really confident about it. I think it's not a complete slam dunk, but I think he very likely is going to Oregon. I do want to talk to you about social media because there are some clues in recruiting. There are a couple different theories that people have that ways that you can tell, even if you don't totally follow recruiting, that if you check out a kid's social media and maybe you check out the way he announces, you can figure out where he's going to go before he announces. We'll give you some of those tips and tricks next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. In the last segment, we interviewed Maliki Matavau, the nation's number 4 tight end. He's got a top 6 that includes the Oregon Ducks. He's making his decision May 27th. And you brought up a good point that sometimes you can get a read on a kid, not necessarily from the interview, because kids are so in tune and they're so careful. Even now, as young, this young, they're careful about their brand. They're careful about the way they talk about things. But they're not as careful with their social media. And we're not talking about Maliki in particular, just recruiting in general. Sometimes kids let the cat out of the bag by what they choose to like, what they choose to retweet, what they feature on Instagram or on Twitter.
Well, and not only that, sometimes they become more popular as a social media personality than they do as a recruit. Haley Cruz.
Yes.
Dude, Haley Cruz is a TikTok star.
Yes.
You would probably think of her of that first if you were just a member of the general public, if you didn't live in the state. You'd think that first before you thought, really great softball player.
Definitely, definitely true for most people. I don't follow TikTok. I know I probably should at this point, but I'm not.
Get on TikTok.
See, I can't mess with TikTok.
Dude, it's funny.
Can't get behind TikTok.
Why?
I don't know. I'm just not into it.
Have you tried it? No. See, that's the thing. You haven't tried it.
Right.
See, okay. I was the same as you at first, too, because I just thought that it was just the young people. The young people just kind of just screwing off. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
And I can't stand it when the young people screw off.
I know.
But I went ahead and downloaded the app because I wanted to take a look-see. And come to find out, it's a bunch of young people dancing and singing to popular music, making funny videos.
I don't care to see that. If I want to see someone sing and dance, it's J-Lo and the actual performers, Beyonce, and it doesn't have to just be women. I mean, it could be you two or whoever. I don't want to just see, I don't care to see kids lip syncing in video for 10 seconds at a time. It just doesn't interest me.
You know J-Lo's on TikTok, right?
Good for her.
That's bro, you can just watch J-Lo on TikTok.
I'm good. But the way you can tell sometimes, we got off track, the way you can tell sometimes where these kids are going to go, you follow their likes, you follow the follows. And that's one of my favorite theories. Sometimes you can tell where a kid's going to go because you look at his most recent follows. And again, this is not the case with Maliki. I just checked and that's not the case with him. But sometimes kids' last 10 follows before they announce, like an hour before they announce, they'll follow every single person in the Washington Huskies recruiting class, the USC recruiting class, the Oregon State, the Oregon recruiting class. You go, well, that's where they're going. If they're retweeting a bunch of Oregon Ducks stuff, probably where they're going. The other theory that I've heard before a kid announces, and this one is almost undefeated. You want to know where a kid is going and he's announcing on national television? This one first, I think, came from the scout.com folks, now 24/7. Pick out the coolest, most modern hat. Go based on not the one they got at the gas station on the way to their announcement. Get the one that has the sticker still on it, the flat bill, the pro back, the nicest hat. 99 times out of 100 is where a kid's going to go. And sometimes kids, and I've seen this actually work, where a kid, everybody thinks the kid's going to, we'll say like Florida, Georgia, and Alabama are on the board. Everybody thinks the kid's going to Georgia. But the Alabama hat is far and away the nicest. And everybody's like, no way. He's going to Georgia. All the crystal balls are in on 24/7 sports. He's going to Georgia. That's where he's going. And then the nicest hat is Alabama, and he picks Alabama. The nicest hat theory is almost undefeated. So if you're ever watching a television announcement, go by the nicest hat.
What is it with the sticker?
I don't know. I'm not a big...
How do the kids keep the sticker on the hat?
What is it with the sticker?
Come on now. Why are you going to leave a sticker on there?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm not in for that.
See, I'm anti-TikTok. You're anti-sticker.
Sticker on hat.
We sound like olds right now.
Now, stickers outside of hats, I'm all for it if you'd like to stick things on other stuff. But Okay. Putting a sticker on a hat and then wearing it on a regular basis to me seems absolutely ridiculous. And I don't know who started the trend either, because usually these things are just like celebrities doing it and then you repeat it. Like, if you were on TikTok, you'd know that everybody's doing Drake's dance, the footsie slide, or whatever the hell they're calling it.
The footsie slide.
Yeah. Help me out, Texine. Texine will know.
The footsie slide.
Something slide. Tootsie slide. That's
it. You cannot sell me on TikTok. I don't care to see not talented dancers dance to usually music I don't like for 10 seconds at a time. And some of the most famous personalities on TikTok are terrible dancers. Terrible. Capital T, terrible. They're popular because people who watch them, 40-year-old men, 50-year-old men, think they're attractive. I'm telling you, I've watched some of the most popular TikTok people and seen their videos and gone, terrible dancer. Ah, she's dancing in a bikini. Now I understand. That doesn't interest me. Not women in bikinis in general. Women in bikinis on TikTok dancing poorly to bad music. I'm not interested in that. That's not for me. That's not my wheelhouse. There's just certain things, like, I know that I'm a certain kind of person. Like, I've never seen Terminator. I've never seen Die Hard. I've never seen RoboCop. I don't.
Dude, stop.
I couldn't
name
a U2 song.
Dude, you are destroying your pop culture credibility.
I don't care. There are certain things about which I pay no attention to. When I grew up as a kid, I didn't get up in the morning and watch Saturday cartoons. Never did it. Didn't do it. I watched early morning basketball. Or Saturday during football season, I watched football. I watched SportsCenter every morning as a kid, usually twice. I know I'm a creature of habit. I like the same kind of foods at the same kind of restaurants. If I go to a new restaurant, I'll probably pick something that I would eat at one of my standby restaurants. I love lasagna. If I go to an Italian place, there's a good chance if I've never been there before, I'm just going with the lasagna. That's the kind of guy I am. That doesn't mean I can't evolve. That doesn't mean I can't do some Twitter and some Instagram, and I'm good there. TikTok does not interest me. And I don't understand why people like it. Now, I will say, the air quotes here, coolest thing I've done recently, I got my first solo win in Fortnite.
That's pretty dope.
Right?
Fortnite's a whole other universe that I've tried to understand, but I mean, I get it. You know, it's customizable and all that kind of stuff. But I also think back to, you know, when we were in high school, kind of around that age or that age of video games, it was still about NCAA football.
I still
have. It sucks that you don't have it.
I still have it.
Lucky.
I'll bring it into the office.
Dude, don't.
And instead of ping pong, we can play that.
Dude, I will not get
worked up. You crush me. You crush me every week in ping pong. We play ping pong every single week, sometimes for an hour, and kind of brainstorm ideas, and you smoke me. And everybody in the office, I think, all the on-air people, I don't know about the off-air people, I think they all play, right?
Most everybody in the office plays. Except Isaac and Suk? No, Isaac and Suk don't play.
Who's the best in the office?
Probably either Luke or I.
Okay.
Luke Anderson or I would say.
Luke. Good for him.
Luke, yeah, probably Luke right now.
So next week, as we predict, Maliki Matavao has already announced he's making his decision May 27th. That's a Wednesday. I'm guessing he's going to Oregon. That's my guess. We'll talk about it next week. Thank you, as always, for listening to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Appreciate you.
Thanks for joining us for Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the show for college recruiting fans with the inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Read Andrew's latest recruiting news in the Oregonian and Oregon Live, and listen for Andrew's updates throughout the week here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan.